Om Shanti, good morning. So for those who don't know me, my name is Maureen, but I came into Gyan with the other Maureen from London, so she was actually called Mughali, and I'm Maureen, so I always use this name so we don't get confused. I've been living in India for the last 18 months working on this project, The Future of Power. Is everyone okay for translation? And also, if you can sit next to somebody who speaks your language, we will do a little bit of workshopping. So if you can sit next to someone who speaks your language, at least one or two. If you sit alone, you can talk to yourself. And just to introduce Lalita, who's sitting here. She is from, she's originally from India, but has lived in Japan for the last 34 years, and she's been helping for the last month or two with the Future of Power. And the young boy, Rupam, he's what we call back office, so he's doing all these helpful things. So this morning, I had a very wonderful Amrit Vela on this quote of power. Power is the capacity to mobilize resources to meet needs. And it sounds quite businesslike, but you apply that to yoga. Power is the capacity to mobilize resources to meet needs. So my experience this morning is that we have the greatest resource of all, God, the ocean of power, the ocean of love, the ocean of wisdom. And for us to be powerful, we need to mobilize that resource to meet not just our needs, but the needs of others. Does it make sense to you? So this is what the future of power is about, and we'll go a little bit through power. Until 11 o'clock, it'll be kind of a introduction to power and a bit of a workshop. And then 12 till 12:30, I'll introduce the project, The Future of Power. So you might have another definition of power. So just as we're going through, let this be a workshop for you. So you can also think what, how you would define power. But you can leave that for later, because we don't have a lot of time, and of course, always a lot to cover. So in a worldly sense, we can see that there's different kinds of power that we use. Position, people use their position. People use their expertise. People use rewards. Right? So in a business world, I think you can relate very much to this. But also, I think we see it a fair bit in the Brahma Kumaris as well. Is it true or not? Position, expertise, rewards, gender. To a lesser and greater extent in different cultures. Management of meaning. So people use, they can change meaning, especially, I think, you know, when we relate it to the Brahma Kumaris, sometimes we do that, no? We take different meaning from the movies and use it to hit people, to encourage people, to mix our manmat, all kinds of things. But we use, you know, when we're clever with meaning, we can use this actually as a power. But, of course, I haven't put anything as a heading of this, just sources of power. It can be positive, it can be negative. We can use these in both ways, not necessarily negative, just as much positive. Because power is like a knife. You know, it's up to us how we use it. Information. So we can withhold information and use that as a power. We can give information in a very positive way. We can use power of information. Allocation of scarce resources. So you can see the negative and positive of this. But I think, what are you seeing more of, the negative or the positive? Oh, that's okay. Yeah, thanks. What do you think of when you're going through this, more the positive or the negative? How many feel positive? How many feel positive? Okay, now how many think negative? Okay, it's about the same. And many neutral, so they can see both. So personal power, positive and negative. We can be a little bit of a charismatic person, an influential person, and that can be used negatively or positively. And use of rules. And then, of course, what we talk about in the future of power is soft power, hard power, but I didn't give the other one that title because it can be soft or it can be hard, but we particularly emphasize soft power. So we'll look at soft power. I think you'll get the meaning of that. So yoga power, which is what I was talking about earlier, yoga power. It's a soft power. Gandhi used soft power, right? The power of ahimsa, non-violence, the power of persuasion, the power to mobilize millions of people to support a cause. But it's soft power. It's not aggressive. It's not violent. So I guess this is really what soft power is, something that's not violent. So yoga power, truth, the power of truth, the power of love. But these are very great powers. They're not less than any other powers that we can talk about in the world. Soul power. So there's God power, the yoga power, but there's also soul power, which is more like the personal power and developing the power of the soul. Silence power. You know, sometimes when there's conflict, no amount of words will help, only silence power. So these are the soft powers that we are particularly good at. Wisdom, rather than just information, but wisdom. Baba said in the Muli the other day, contentment, the greatest of all powers. And we'll look at that a little bit more later. And he said, when there's contentment, all the powers are there. Compassion. There's a very interesting study on non-violence. There's a book written by someone called Marshall Rosenberg, Non-Violent Communication. And he starts the book with the question, what is it that makes people lose their compassion? Which is really what we see, that people can act so violently towards each other. But what is it that makes people lose their compassion? And what is it that enables people to hold on to their compassion? Like people that have been hostages, you know? They can hold on to that compassion for 20 years. Nelson Mandela, how he held on to that compassion through all that he went through. So compassion is a huge power. Srimat. So Baba was talking about the hand of Srimat. And Srimat is a power. Actually, all the things that Baba is guiding us in gives us power. Even what we eat, even the fact that we're not eating non-veg food, that we're eating food cooked by yogis, it means it's clean. But if you think about Srimat, it's such a power in our life and it makes us powerful. And just today I received an email. The Times of India just released an article saying how people who meditate have much greater memory. You know, and it's like you can't imagine all the benefits we're getting from all the Srimat that we have. You'd have to take time to think about it. And all of this, I think, takes time to think about. So Baba also mentioned today Jivan Mukti in a second. And I don't think that's just the end time. It's not just when we go home. So what I'd like to do as the first activity, just share with someone sitting next to you an experience of when you've experienced extraordinary help and come out of some situation of either inner conflict or danger. Because this is the power that we have, God's power, the power of what Baba calls touching and catching. You know, there's a story, just to give you one illustration of this, of actually Sister Maria, who stays here in Mount Abu. She was in a situation of being kidnapped. And she got this touching to be in the consciousness and in the awareness of Kali. You know, the goddess Kali. You know, this kind of power. And she just went into this consciousness. And that man got nervous. And then they couldn't find the key to the getaway car and all these things. But she escaped from that situation. So we have, you know, this touching and catching and, you know, so just share with the person next to you, just for a few minutes, a situation where you have experienced a very extraordinary experience of just getting out of some inner conflict or even some danger or something like that, just with the person next to you. Or three people, two or three people. I'm so sorry it's such a short time, but there's many things to get through. But how many people just heard in these 5 minutes we gave it, actually? It was. No, it was. I'm telling you, I'm watching the clock. So how many people heard an amazing story? How many people heard an amazing story just then? How many people heard an amazing story? At least 15 or so. Fantastic. You see, we all have this different kind of power. Like, this is a power that you can't use hard power, like the example of that kidnap. That lady couldn't have fought. She couldn't have run away. She couldn't have used any of the powers that we know of. You know, it's another power that we need to be, or we can be, using that's even more effective. So we'll have to move on. I could talk a lot about that, but we'll have to move on. Have more conversations about all of these things over lunch, please. So in India, I don't know if you've heard this expression in your country. I only heard it in India. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. This is, I would say, the only thing that I hear about power in India. At least in India, power is synonymous with the words corruption and abuse. Perhaps because they only use the English word power for this kind of power, and they use another word like shakti for spiritual power. This might be why. Have you heard of this expression? Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. How many have? Okay, so it's not completely new. But this, even when we present the future of power, people say, why are you using this word power? It's so negative. People don't have a positive perception of power, generally. And in fact, the biggest aha from, we've had 10 dialogues so far, from these top leaders with all the power, the biggest aha is that power can be benevolent. It can be positive. It's completely new for them that power can be something positive. Interesting. So this is why I'm moving you fast, because I want to you to have little snippets of conversation about a few things. What are the words used for power in your language? And how would you define power? And if you could actually, after this few minutes, give us those words and that meaning, Because it's very interesting that power is perceived differently, and maybe Lalita can catch some of those meanings. So again, just for a few minutes, so maybe if you speak English, you would like to take the second question. How would you define power? If English is not your first language, what are the words used for power in your language, and is the meaning different? Because I know in German there's a few words, in Polish there's a different meaning. So you can talk to the person next to you for 2 or 3 minutes. How would you define power? What are the words used for power in your language?
If you want to work on your own and just take notes, it's also fine. How would you define power?
So I see we've got Portuguese here, we've got German. What other languages do we have? Serbian. What other languages? Maybe at the end. Yeah, unless it's on the topic. Yeah, maybe at the end.
Okay, so did you find that in your language, the word power has a different meaning to the word in English? Florian, in German, what is... Because I've heard in German it's very different. So there's a word in German that's only used in political areas. When it's about people. Is it negative, positive, neutral?
Dominant. Dominant. So you wouldn't use the word power.
You would use the word, you wouldn't use the word power for politics.
Well, we obviously have the German word Macht, and that's if people, the party comes to power, then we use the same word. Obviously, we use that word, a party comes to Macht, or so it's, but it's, I wouldn't say it's technically negative, but it's a position of dominance, certainly.
Dominance. You know,
which is, if you're elected to be the dominant party, then that's in itself still neutral.
Yeah. You know? And is there another word for power that's not the same, not political?
Yeah, but then we have same word, we have force, strength, you know, similar words we have in English as well,
okay,
which we then use for the
force,
body
strength,
or for machines and so on. But sometimes they are, of course, quite interchangeable, you know. But the predominant usage is like that.
Someone else? Yes, brother?
They need to translate.
Empowerment is more positive. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Empowerment is more positive in his point of view. Anyone else? Yes. Which language? Which one?
Swahili.
And Philippines. Okay. Swahili and Filipino has many dialects.
So in Swahili it's fujo, which is strength or force, and in Philippines it's lakas or kalakasan, which is actually neutral, but people now have different connotation. Perception is negative.
So pretty much in
German.
Swahili, is it negative, positive, neutral?
That's the thing we found on both words, is it's actually neutral, but because of the context that people use it in, they always put it in a negative
way. Yeah. So do you find that in your languages, in your countries, usually power is perceived quite negatively?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because actually it should sit next to love, peace and happiness, shouldn't it? There's nothing bad about power. It's wonderful. So this is what we're exploring. Was there one more? Yes.
Yeah, actually, power comes from a word. It's a very broad perspective. Power, it depends on what particular topic we have to discuss with. It's a very jargon, no? Power to, it's a political power. It's more of financial power. Power to overrule.
Yeah. And then so, there's wind power, solar power. It's such a big word. It's there should be many words, it seems, rather than just one for all of this. Yeah. Okay, so we'll move on. So what we're talking about is moving from hard power to soft power. And even in management nowadays, they're moving more from management to leadership. So just to have a little look at that and why this is happening.
So classical managerial work is planning, organizing, measuring, and controlling, right? This is typical managerial work. Whereas leadership is creating vision and empowering,
developing relationships, inspiring and coaching.
So even in corporate world, they're moving more from management.
One reason is because a lot of our technology is taking over this work. But also there's a need more and an expectation more for visioning, empowerment, developing relationships, inspiring and coaching. But what's also interesting, this was from Silvana, who's a lecturer to MBA students, and one of the topics she takes up is power. She gives 40 different lectures on power. Fascinating what she talks about. But from her, from the research, they're showing now that in the recruitment criteria, technical knowledge, how much do you think they're basing their recruitment for CEOs on technical knowledge, and how much on emotional intelligence, ability to manage the self, ability to manage others? What do you think the ratio is these days? What do you think? Huh? 50-50? What do you think? What do you think is technical knowledge? How much do you think they're recruiting people based on technical knowledge as opposed to emotional intelligence? What do you think the percentage would be?
10% only. Is that true? Because you're in the management field.
Yeah. Because I thought that, you know, I mean, we know soft powers are good, but I thought the world was still very much supporting the hard powers.
But in fact, 30, at least in Australia, this is only Australia, 30% of the recruitment criteria is only from technical knowledge and 70% emotional intelligence. So you can see that in the corporate world, they're recognizing soft power, right?
It's a very good thing, you know, because this is more humane than the other style of management. So when we're looking at power with versus power over. So if I'm in the frame of my power, I will have power over you because my worldview is, it's all about my power. And this is, I think, what's happening mostly in the world, that people are thinking about their own power.
The opposite to that is your power, where we actually abnegate, we give up our power, we surrender our power. But neither of those is healthy for myself or for the others, really. So what we need to move towards and to see how much we are balanced in this, where it's my power, oh, that line moved, my power and your power, which is then power with, not power over, not subjugate, you know, giving up my power, but power with. So we need to find the middle path in that spectrum so that
equally I'm thinking of my power and your power. More what you're talking about, empowerment. So power over is exercising control through our position and also honing in on the weaknesses of others. Whereas power with is respecting the other and asking for their input and honing in on the strengths of the other person. And if you look at it from a corporate basis, of course, power with would be much more effective in getting a good job done. In fact, where there's huge corruption, the work just full stop does not get done. When there's real power over, you'll see that the work just doesn't get done. The only way it gets done is through bribes and things. Otherwise, it just doesn't get done. So we should look at ourselves and think how much we are, you know, having this awareness of power with instead of power over, and see how we might be still using power over others. Now I want you to think on your own of an event when you really were in your power, some moment in your life where you really felt that you were in your power. Just reflect on that, how it felt. And what were the conditions? What was your state of mind? And now coming to the present, in your current state, compared to when you were in your power, where are you now? Are you feeling generally in your power? Or are you feeling rather powerless? Just self-reflection. And see from your first experience what's missing, what's happened. So, you know, they talk about Lakshman's Rekha. You know, before Lakshman left Sita, you know the story, he drew a line around her and said that if you come outside of this line, I can't help you. So in this way, we also have to see for ourselves, when we stay in our power, then it's like we're in our line. So what takes you out of your power? What is it that takes you out of your power? Loss of self-respect, temporary gains, being influenced by others. What takes you out of your power? Jealousy, comparing with others. Fear, ego, greed. What takes you out of your power? And the next question, how do you come back to your power? And on the last question, maybe you would like to share with the person next to you, if you like, if you want to learn from them also, how do you come back to your power? What do you do? For me, I would say that losing self-respect for me is losing power. And the only way I can get back into my power is to come back into my self-respect. That's another class.
Yeah, I know, but it's another class. It's a big... I know.
Oh, translation. How do you do that? How do you come back into your self-respect? But you share what brings you back into your power. I think you're used to my 2 minutes. Most people have stopped talking and are ready for me to move you on. Okay, we'll move on now. Maybe we've got time for 2 or 3 people. What moves you back into your power? A little specific. Of course, we can all say, remember Baba, but a little specifically. Of course, that's the main way.
Say present moment, because
to bring yourself into the present moment,
where your power is in the first place, and you got connected to Baba.
Does it work?
Yes,
Can you hear that okay? Taking a deep breath and just bringing yourself into the present moment, because in the present is where your power is. Anyone else? Anyone else? Okay, so I can respond just quickly to this. I mean, it is a big thing, self-respect, because I've had to work on it, you know, for many years. And I started off, people would have always thought I had quite good self-confidence, self-respect, but it goes very deep, this awareness. And I would say, and I'm not trying to promote Mike George's book, but a lot of what I've come to realize over all these years is in the book, The Seven Myths of Love. And I think the biggest one is believing that we need love. That's the biggest trap, I feel, thinking that I need love. I am love. And when I can get into that awareness that I am love, I can bring myself into self-respect very quickly. But I think that's the biggest one, I think, because I think we cheapen ourselves trying to get love from others, and we don't even have yoga because we try to get love from Baba, which is more bhakti than yoga. If we're trying to get love, is that yoga? Yoga is connection of the soul, and that's why Baba says we have to be soul conscious so we can remember him. So if I'm thinking, oh, I need love, am I soul conscious? Am I soul conscious if I think I need love? No. Because I'm already in body consciousness. I'm already out of my line of power. So, powering up. So we see that power's on tap from Baba, isn't it? And from the soul. We don't need anything, actually. Everything's within ourselves. And this is what Baba is helping us to realize. So we've got, you know, ourself, and everything we need is within ourself. Wisdom, love, peace, power, happiness. I am a being of all these things. So it's on tap. And then, of course, it's on tap from Baba. Those experiences, when we connect, then it's, you know, it's power. Unlimited, power unlimited. But what are the leakages and what are the blocks? What are your leakages? So fears or controlling block Baba from coming through fully. Recurring waste thoughts drain our energy. What could I empower myself more with? Yoga, spiritual company, blessings. You know, I know a brother here in Madhuban. He just wants to do anything for anyone because he wants the blessings. He says, anyone want anything, I'll help you. It's wonderful. But it's very clever, actually. And he's getting so many blessings. I think many of you know who he is. Many of us meet there in the morning. So this we won't have time to go through in detail. I think we'll leave that one. If you want to get a copy of these, you can. But leakages. So, waste thoughts. So, Baba tells us to put a full stop. These questions of why, how, what, when, who. Even though Baba keeps telling us again and again and again, we tend to have an overactive intellect in the wrong way. Is it true? That our intellect, instead of being divine, goes into these questions that are really useless. Why is she doing that? Is it helpful for me? Why is she doing that? Why is he doing that? You know, it's not helpful. But we still have, it's just a habit. And the more we used our intellect before Gyan, I think the stronger that habit is. So Baba's greatest gift to us is a divine intellect. Again, soft power rather than hard power. Because often we've used our intellect to analyze and to criticize and to compare. Whereas a divine intellect is a very, it has intuition, it can get those touchings and catchings. Baba once talked about having, he said, which is better, to have a clever head or a clean heart? And what's your experience? You know, when you've got a clean heart, Baba can work through you. So it's much more than your wisdom and your knowledge and your understanding and your capacity when Baba can come through. But if we have a clever head, we don't allow Baba to come through. So one of the greatest leakages is this waste. There's others, but what are your leakages? So again, reflect a minute. What are your leakages? What's the main reason why power leaks away? Carelessness. You know, all kinds of ways power leaks away. And what will you, how will you stop those leakages? Have you improved much? Baba's been emphasizing that we have to stop this waste. Have you seen some good improvement since focusing on it? How many feel they've improved in reducing waste by giving this attention? Yeah, very good. Yeah. The homework. Has anyone, would anyone like to share what they do to stop those leakages or how you have improved in not having waste thoughts? How have you improved? Has anyone got a very good yukti they'd like to share? A good method? Yes, brother at the back. Can you come forward a bit just to save time? The mic won't fit anyway. Just speak into the mic like this.
Yeah. How to stop leakages? This is a question.
You, how do you stop your leakage?
Think about the thing, what is negative means anything. You waste the thought, right? So, matlab,
so he says that suppose something is happening to you, so we can think what is it what damage it is causing to our life. So make a list of all the damage it's causing to me. And then make another list thinking, if I leave this, what benefits will I get? What will I receive? And think about these things for a few days. No need to share much with anybody. So maybe at Amrit Vela or whenever we sit with Baba, bring both the things in front. What are my benefits if I leave this and what is the loss if I keep them? So then whatever the positive things are, they come into the soul, they become an embodiment of that. And then we become free from those negative things and they never come and influence us again. Thank
you. Good, thank you. Thank you. And anyone else? Quickly?
Sisters?
Okay. Yeah, one more. Just say your name and your country. Someone said it would be so nice if we had name tags.
I'm Shanti. Name is Radha from Serbia. It was inner work on stopping waste. And in essence, it's more silence. It's more connection. It's more positivity. It's more awareness. And with that, what it comes is inner power and kind of being more elevated and choosing the thoughts.
Mm. Thank you. Your name?
Afi, it's from U.S. This is funny, but I usually tell my people, my friends and clients, when you potty train your thoughts, then you're in the safe place.
Potty train your thoughts. Which means
people
who
to discipline your thoughts, and there's a tool that I usually share with them to how to discipline their tools.
Okay. So you can talk to Sister later. She's got tools how to potty train your thoughts.
Okay, so let's move on to blockages.
One of the major blockages is because we think we need something. So I'm sure you've heard about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, of course, physiological, safety. So they're kind of the base needs that every human being has. But then we go into belongingness, esteem, and self-actualization. So from the lowest to the highest order needs. But, you know, there's a question how much we really have these needs, aren't there? Because we belong to Baba, we belong to ourselves, we belong to the deity kingdom, and yet we can still feel such a deep sense of lack of belonging. And the great speciality of Dadi Prakashmani, Dadiji, was to give people a sense of belonging. Nuerbai carries it very much as well. And, you know, the feeling that you belong to me and I belong to you. So Baba tells us this is, you know, a very elevated way to see each other and to have a relationship with each other. But, you know, all of that we can do, but when ultimately we get down to it, as I said before, we have everything we need within ourselves. But still on a physical level, you know, and that's, I think, our challenge that, you know, like for me, I'm living in India. I shared with people, I think I've left all my comfort zones. I don't have one left now. I did have one and that got taken away from me. So, you know, there's that feeling sometimes of real discomfort when we go outside those comfort zones. But in actual fact, they're not real needs. They're more psychological. They're not real. I wouldn't say any of those comfort zones are actually real needs. They're just comforts, you know? So, and we're all going to lose our comfort zones soon, right? Won't be long before we lose our comfort zones. So there's no harm in going outside because I think we've got to get used to living without comfort zones. They're going to be taken away from us if we don't give them up. But that's another big topic that would be good to explore. But self-esteem, you know, I don't need esteem from others when I realize who I am. And in the same way, self-actualization, you know, it's there, it's all there. I don't need anything outside for these higher needs at all. And even on the level of physiological needs and safety, you know, if I could tell you so many stories of people who have been in life-threatening situations and yet they can feel safe. You know, they just, that awareness of being safe keeps them safe. So needs, we're used to them and we're used to being told that we have all these needs. But on a spiritual level, we need to move on to another level of awareness. But these are really what creates blocks. So we won't have time to go through this because I want to finish this part. But very nice. I just captured what Ramesh Bhai shared the other day. He said, the power of love and truth are the basis for all the powers, and only love and truth will go with us to Satyug because they're virtues as well as powers. He said, the other powers won't go with us, the power to tolerate, the power to discern. They won't be in an emerged state at all. But he was saying that love and truth are the foundation for all the powers and their virtues as well. And he said the power of truth is the science of spirituality. Because actually it's applied science. When you live truth, you live spirituality. When you use the laws of spirituality, they're all based in truth. But again, to think about it. And the power of love is the application of that science. So a very nice thing that he shared in his class just the other day. And then, of course, Baba was talking about the power of contentment, that it's the greatest power and the basis of all other powers. And there's also something they say in India, whatever you need, you should give that. That's very interesting, because when we feel we need something, we often feel it's hard to give it, whether it's money. If you need money, give donation. If you need respect, give respect. If you need love, give love.
How many of you experience, though, that that works? But at the time, it's a little difficult. When you're feeling needy, it's a little difficult to actually have that, you know, when you feel you need money to give money. You think, no, I can't give any, I need it. But you try it. It's the law of karma. So to fill in my void, emerge the virtue or quality where you are needy. For example, the need for respect. And then give it out in great abundance. And automatically you'll start to feel that you have it. You wouldn't be giving it if you didn't have it. So you'll start to feel that you have it. And others will give you blessings. And of course, the karmic law is that whatever you give, you will get. So it has to work on every level. But when we're needy, often we become small. You know, we start to think we have to grab. But that's when we really have to give. Whenever we need it is when we need to give it. And this is also just another thing I want to bring in here, slowing down. And there was a question the other day to Ramesh Bhai about the power of thoughts, or Bridgemohan Bhai it could have been. But what if you study thoughts? There's four types of thoughts. Beta, which is normal thought patterns, like concentration, arousal, alertness, cognition. This is what we're using all the time. But higher levels, you see the hertz, like the, you know, the speed of those thoughts, really. They go from 14 to 30. But when you're in the higher ones, then it's associated with anxiety, uneasiness, feeling of separation, and fighting or running away. So when we've got higher levels of this, you know, fast, in other words, when our thoughts are fast, that's what happens. We get anxiety, uneasiness, and we actually create cortisol, the stress hormone, and that adds to that stress. It's actually a chemical that we create, and then that makes us feel. Have you felt stress? This, like, it's very uncomfortable. It's like the whole body is going fast, not just your mind, because you're creating this chemical. And then alpha thoughts are like when we start to have a little bit of relaxation, relaxed focus, and this increases serotonin. And if you know about that, it brings happiness. It increases our super learning. And we have pre-sleep and pre-waking drowsiness, which is apparently very good for, like, it's a relaxed kind of awakening. We don't awaken in, like, that kind of a start, and we go to sleep in that drowsiness. And, you know, meditation, when we meditate, we begin to access what they call in science or neuroscience the unconscious mind. To us, that sounds a little bit like negative, but they just mean, you know, what's there that nobody knows, but it's there. And then when we slow down the thoughts even more, we start to have REM sleep, dreaming sleep, and we increase catecholamines, which increases our capacity to learn and our memory. It increases our creativity. We are more integrative rather than separate and emotionally intelligent. This is very interesting. When we slow down our thoughts, we have a greater potential to change our behavior, which is what we all want, right? And, you know, we can go into hypnotic imagery, into trance. So it's a deeper meditation, not just meditation, but going a bit deeper and accessing even more the unconscious mind. And, of course, delta, which you see is 0.1 to 3.9, if you see the difference between 30. So in other words, when we really slow down our thoughts, then we can have dreamless sleep. And we release human growth hormone, which is, you know, revitalizing for the body. We can go into depth, a trance-like state, a non-physical state. There's a loss of body awareness and the access to the unconscious mind. So what the point is that scientifically it's also proven that the more we slow down, the more powerful we are. And it's opposite to what the world thinks, that speed is power. Actually, it's It's researched. And of course, you all know about balancing the right and left side of the brain. I'm just going to go a bit fast now. And how, you know, the right and left are responsible for different things. So just keeping this balance so that we can then have traffic control a few minutes late. And then we'll go into... So I don't know about you, but at least for me, the whole topic of power was something quite unexplored. You know, the only thing I'd thought about, of course we have the eight powers and, you know, the spiritual side of things, but how power actually works in the world. And so this is what we're doing with the future of power. I'm just going to change now the slide to the other one. So this is the project, the future of power. So when this project started 3 years ago, I think even then, we didn't have much to say about power. We still don't say much about it because we really do bring people together in partnership of exploring the power. So the future of power is in no way lecturing or teaching people about power. Oh, that was just what attracted you to come here. So Baba has said the reason why this project was set up, and it was set up by... it was instigated by Brother Nizar, who did the Serve Africa. I think you saw him anyway the other day. Baba got him to stand up. But he did this project, Serve Africa. But the other thing that was playing on his mind for many years is that Baba said, and he first said it actually in 1975, that the main role of the double foreigners is to awaken the Kumbhakarnas in India. So he started a project. Sorry, I will read that. He started a project that was kind of bringing foreigners to India to do programs, but that wasn't really working so well. So this was the next project that came up. But Baba said, Bab Dada's elevated versions of the beginning were that those from abroad will awaken the Kumbhakarnas, the sleeping giants of India. So now try to have speakers and VIPs from abroad for the big programs you hold. There should also be VIPs. You have a good plan. Brahmins come anyway, but VIPs should come and share their experience of what they have received. And then he said, so this is when the project was being instigated already. There should now be such a program by the double foreigners in Bharat to serve the VIPs of all the cities in Bharat, especially those who are in connection and relationship. There should be this program in Bharat to serve the VIPs. In each state there's one or another VIP, and so in the main states invite the IPs and VIPs, not the Brahmins, because you've had many programs of the Brahmins, and it should be covered by the media, showing that the contact souls of this land and abroad are taking benefit. So very clear direction. So it's come out of this. So what this story, there's a storyline behind the future of power. So it is quite what's called here India-centric. So, you know, I may as well read, it'll be faster. The future of power is the theme of a series of dialogues taking place across India to deepen understanding of the nature of power and help restore awareness of the nation's spiritual heritage both within India and abroad. Can India, so this is the challenge that's given to these VIPs, leaders from all different fields, can India, widely accepted as the home of the highest spiritual understanding, set a lead in renewing the benevolence in human affairs and show the way towards lasting solutions for current global problems? So what we're asking the people of India, with the great spiritual heritage that India's famous for, can you change the face of power to make it something benevolent? So that when people hear the word power, they don't hear abuse and corruption. This is the challenge that they are being given. And it's quite exciting how they take that.
So the external aims over it's more than 3 years already, to bring together leaders of India to find ways to develop their individual and collective strategies in modelling responsible leadership now and for the future. So you can imagine a foreigner, like I go to invite all these VIPs. So you can imagine a foreigner going and saying to them, power is coming back to India. Because of this shift, you know, power's leaving the West and coming back to Asia. And everyone's eyes are on basically two countries, India and China. So it's something, you know, 3 years ago people said, what? But now it's becoming more and more evident to people. But the internal aim, of course, is to come into contact with VVIPs and VIPs so they can be the mics. Because the other thing that Baba keeps emphasizing, you know, in India they have these programs for 50,000, 100,000 people. They make so much effort. They work day and night. They do such amazing service. And Baba says, very good, but where's the mics? And I always think, wow. He says, very good program, but where are the mics, right? Every Muli, I think, without fail, he's pulled our attention to the mics. And this is very interesting. Lord Macaulay from England, in 1930, can't read it there very well, said, this is very interesting. I have traveled across the length and breadth of India and I have not seen one person who is a beggar in 1835. Can you imagine? I have not seen one person who is a beggar, who is a thief. Such wealth I have seen in this country. Such high moral values. People of such caliber that I do not think we would ever conquer this country unless we break the very backbone of this nation, which is her spiritual and cultural heritage. Interesting. And therefore I propose that we replace her old and ancient education system, her culture. For if the Indians think that all that is foreign and English is good and greater than their own, they will lose their self-esteem, their native culture, and they will become what we want them to become. You know, very, very strategic. And actually this is what India's been doing, right? Looking for anything foreign. They think things that are foreign are better, which is why we can use this opportunity to, you know, be heard. But it was very strategic. And can you imagine, 1835, no beggars, no thieves, such wealth. So very interesting. The spiritual heritage is significant. So when we look for the VIPs, we're looking for thought leaders of national and international stature, who have a voice and an inclination towards using power responsibly, values-based, ethical. And we're also looking for young and emerging leaders who've already made considerable impact. So they might not be the top people, but they're emerging. Individuals who have powerful influence within a particular sector, but they are not nationally recognized. So because we're working state by state, it's mostly we have been able to attract people who are famous in the state. But when you think of the population, that's amongst, you know, 200 million people, 100 million people, 50 million people. So when we say within the state, it's still very, very, very significant. We have had a few national, international level people, but of course, there's not many of them, and we've attracted some of them. Maybe totally 10 or 15 out of 200 have been international level. So the core team is Brother Nizar, and then he has an advisory team, Sister Janti, Sister Mohini, Mike George, Judy Rogers, Neville Hodgkinson, and then I'm coordinating.
And then we have Sister Neetu in Mumbai who's doing the communications. Brother Rupam, the back office. Sister Lalita's been helping us. And the model for FOP, so actually what our aim, Baba did say we should serve those in contact, but because we're looking for mics also, our aim is to get new people. So we always want at least 70%, 80% of people that haven't been to Madhuban aren't in close contact with us. So that's our aim all the time. And we bring them together for a half-day dialogue. And then we have to sustain them, which we haven't been very good at yet. But so I'm not going to talk about that until we do a good job. So we appoint a local coordinator for the project in each city. And we agree on a venue. Usually we hold at a 5-star hotel. And then we have a public program in some kind of a hall. But surprisingly, the 5-star hotels have not been expensive. You know, we usually have about 40 in our dialogue. And just to give you a rough figure, it's usually $20 a head for breakfast, morning tea, the venue, lunch, which we cook from the center. You know, so it's not unreasonable. You know, it's kind of a reasonable cost that that it's taking. And then we set up teams, people to do the invitations, the printing, publicity, some people to just give sakash. So people are meditating in both the venues 1 week before the program, which is very effective. And then follow up, that's, you know, what I said is our bit weak point at the moment. And then we ask the centers to give us a list of 200 top VIPs, leaders in all the different fields, arts, medicine, education, politics, business, agriculture, all the different fields. And then from the 200, we usually select 60 and start inviting those 60. And out of the 60, usually we can get 40 or 50. But they have to make this list because we wouldn't know in all the different cities. That's a lot more detail of what would be the criteria. And then I come to that city and invite the people. So I go with a local sister, and maybe a brother as well, but always a sister. And we go and meet these VIPs. And, you know, I don't know if you have heard of this director, Subhash Ghai, but he's a very famous director. I would say internationally, he's had Hollywood acclaim. And when I went to meet him, he said, I don't know why I haven't met the Brahma Kumaris yet. You know, it was a really good meeting. And we don't know. We think these people are so big, maybe it's very hard to meet them. And we have to get away to meet them. But usually it's somebody knows somebody knows somebody. So we get to the top people and we tell the centers, if you think they're impossible to meet, they're the first ones we want to try. Because they're usually the mics, you know. And we have to find... And this project, because it's not direct BK, and it's very interesting, and we've had some very top people. In our first one, we had Ramoji Rao from Hyderabad, who's internationally known also. He's got a film. He's like a Bollywood, you know, Hollywood in Hyderabad. So because they see the other people that have come, they think, this is something. And if they're really, really big, we can't expect them to sit for 5 hours in that program, so we invite them to be a guest speaker. But Ramoji Rao joined the dialogue, Subhash Ghai joined the dialogue, and but other people like Narendra Modi, the chief minister of Ahmedabad, he was the chief guest. The king of Jagannath Puri, he was in the dialogue as well as our chief guest. So he was pretty much with us the whole day. But it's really, really wonderful. So we send, you know, a few people to go and meet those VIPs, give them, of course, toli and very nice materials. We'll show you the materials later. So the materials are a letter from Dadi G inviting them. She's the host. And she has come to 8 out of the 10 programs that we've held. We give them a very beautiful invitation card, reports on dialogues held before.
and we make a facilitator's profile, all foreigners, and give them, of course, a gift. So that's a letter from Daddy. This is the invitation brochure, which is very good quality, really very beautiful. And this is the confirmation card. So we go and meet them again. Once they confirm, we go and meet them again. It's often quite difficult to get another meeting. So if we can't, we send it. But we send it with Toli and, you know, usually another little gift. And that's it. And then we give them also a special message from Daddy saying, it's wonderful you're coming. But if you read the message, it's really very beautiful. It's very spiritual. It's like a class from Daddy. So it's very nice. And then we used to give them this book, The Story of Immortality, which is very expensive. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's a beautiful, big book. Because we thought if they take this book, they'll feel obligated to come. Because it's a very, you know, very good gift. But it didn't work. Still, half the people don't come, so we don't give it anymore. We give it to them when they actually come. So this is Daddy's gift to them. Because if they don't come, maybe they don't even read it. So it's not worth it. And so at each dialogue, we have 5 BKs or people who are in contact. Not necessarily close contact. We had a minister from Kuwait. We've had, you know, somebody flew here from Chile, came to Indore. A real out-of-the-way, nowhere land, kind of, came to Indore, spent 2 days and flew off to Paris. One woman came from Denmark for 2 days and went back. So foreigners are taking, they weren't BKs. They're taking a very good interest in this topic. And I think they like the idea to come and be with all these people, which is, you know, quite an experience to be with them. So, and people... Actually, we're not that selective with foreigners, to be really honest. We haven't got many VIP foreigners in our family. We haven't, let's face it. And especially of non-Indian origin, because we're using this, you know, this thing of foreign. So we're using this. So if people would like to come to a Future of Power, if you think people in your center would be good to be invited, either BKs or closed souls with some kind of a profile. We're looking for professional people, but, you know, they don't have to be the top in their field, as it says this, or leaders, but just with a good profile. And it's a very beautiful experience because, you know, being in the centers and just 5 of you, you get very spoiled by the centers and the dialogue is wonderful. Either Daddy's there or another senior is usually there. We're not expecting Daddy anymore because she's been great to come to all of these, but, you know, we don't want to push her. We want her to live forever. So we're not going to be a part of that pushing. So the process, well, I'll just tell you in essence. The process is just to, first of all, we start with breakfast so we can get them on time. And then 9 o'clock we start. We have a facilitator. First, Nizarbai gives a 10-15 minute introduction, and then the facilitator takes them through some questions, which I'll show you later. But the materials they get when they arrive, they get this kind of introduction. It's a participants list. By doing this, we don't have to have them introduce themselves because it's all written down. Most people know a lot about these people because they're all leaders in their field. So they don't actually need to give their introduction because, as you know, that could take 1 or 2 hours, just that alone. So we skip that. And in fact, we try to bring them out of that because they can't really dialogue if they're thinking, I'm so and so. So we really try to bring them out of that. And it works. Usually we get them feeling quite safe and open to share within the first hour. The facilitators have been really good. And this is the facilitators list that we give when we give the introduction. So they see a bunch of foreigners and think, oh, this is an interesting program. Because Nizar, if you don't know, he's a Muslim. He's from a Muslim background. And me being a foreigner, like what they would see, a Christian background, we're not the typical BK people that they know. So they get curious. What is this? You know, so it kind of helps to open it a little bit. And at the dialogue, we only have 40 people, so we're very clear who will attend. You know, we have one sit-down Brahmin, a local person, and one sit-down BK Brahmin, and then the rest are kind of lokik. Even the Brahmins who come, they dress in lokik clothes, a bit like Hanuman sitting with the shoes, you know. So they can listen and know what's going on, and they don't know that this is... We don't hide it, but we don't make it obvious. And then this is the program for the dialogue, which I just spoke through, pretty much. And these are the questions. So we have all been influenced by someone in our lives, inspired by their way of being, their values, or even their leadership. Choose one or two people who've had a strong influence in your life. What specifically was their influence on you? Describe the person or share a story. And how was their influence or values translated into your life? How has that influence come into my life? So it's kind of quite a safe question for people to start with. So, and to focus on inner powers and elevated actions of people. And they always say their mother, their teacher, someone like that. They don't say, you know, they don't say Obama or someone. They usually say someone quite personal. And then to reflect on, with wisdom, on a major crisis in your life, and what one inner quality, value or virtue did you use to remain strong and remain true to your personal principles. So to get them then to think about their own principles and values. In what way did it give you inner strength? And then the current state of the world is due to the loss of spiritual power, that really our actions in the outside world reflect our inner state of being. So how do we grow and sustain this spiritual power? And of course the facilitator takes them a bit more slowly into this, within the family, in the workplace, in the larger community, in the nation. And the call of time is personally calling me. What is the call of time personally calling me to do differently? What's the one thing I'm going to be committed to do from tomorrow onwards? So, you know, it's just to get them to go inside. So with each question, they share with just three other people on the table, and then they change tables for another question. So they get to meet a few people, and they get to go deep. And what mostly people say is that they're amazed that they felt so connected so quickly with the other people that they hadn't met before, and that they feel this sense of belonging. You know, very, very much after the program, they feel very close. So one of the outcomes we hope is to, I think somewhere it says this. After the dialogue, we produce something like this, a little report. Actually, we only did it 5 times. We've had 10 dialogues. Now we don't need to print anymore. We just put it soft copy online on the web page. So you can also see all of this on the website. But it's quite nice, just the heading and then something about that city. And then we put the biodatas of all the participants, usually much briefer now because, see, now we are doing more quotes and less biodata. Because when we started, people didn't know what to say about power. They didn't say much. But it seems to be getting, you know, a little bit deeper and richer, this dialogue, every time. So the red is their quote and the blue is their biodata. And then some photos from the event. And then this is the evening program. So we invite 1,000 or 2,000 people, depends on the center, for the evening program. This is an old one. It's even more attractive now. And in the evening program, we have a panel. So 4 people from the dialogue are interviewed on the stage to give their feedback from the dialogue. And then Daddy Janki speaks, and then we have a chief guest speak, and meditation,
you know, so this was the chief guest, Narendra Modi, in the evening program, Nuer Bhai, Dadiji, and, you know, Sarla Didi. Actually, that's got a bit more than we normally have, but we keep it very simple. We don't do flowers and, you know, big introductions and all those things.
And this is very untraditional,
you know, and the centers had sometimes have a little bit of problem, but they just trust us and they say, okay, if you say.
And because it's our program, they don't have to take so much responsibility for it.
You know, it's like Future of Power and Brahma Kumaris, an initiative of Brahma Kumaris. Because if it was them, they might feel very bad.
But actually the feedback has been that they quite like it because they feel that they have to keep with the times and become more contemporary.
And so much time is taken in all those, you know, felicitations, as they call it, giving flowers and all of that. So they quite like this model. So this is just some pictures from, looks like the one in Calicut. Another one. We usually have some music also for half an hour before the program. That helps to get them there on time. And there's a little booklet on leadership that we give them when we give them the invitation. So there's been 10 programs in 10 cities. About 1,000 have come into good contact. We've developed all our marketing tools now. We have a website and we have a stable group of Double BK facilitators, about 7 different facilitators we've called on, but we're always looking for more because this season we want to do 9.
And we only do it during the season because otherwise we can't get foreigners. So we do it between October and April. So when you're coming to Madhuban, you could bring a guest to the dialogue or come yourself and then come on to Madhuban. Of course, we don't expect anyone generally to fly to India just for 2 days. So it will take place in 32 cities throughout India, and we will develop a book of insights of Indian thought leaders to come out of this. In fact, that's going to be ready by October. And we're also, just before I say that, another aim of this dialogue is that we are building a body of knowledge. So we will be able to have a very rich and very comprehensive book on soft power, you know, because it's something new. Like even Silvana said, they've only been talking about power at the university for the last 5 years. Otherwise, it wasn't in any curriculum, you know. So it's kind of a new subject area, and we will be a resource in developing this. And we're going to do one in Australia on the 21st, 22nd of July. So we're starting now to, this will be an experiment, but we plan to have one in Oxford, one in Peace Village. We've already got an invitation to Dubai, and Daddy says we should go there. Because one Muslim came from Dubai, again, such a big businessman, Muslim, never met him before. We thought it'd be so difficult to get the appointment. He was more interested in the meditation than the program. So you never know who's out there. You've just got to, you know, make the effort to reach them. And now Sister Shivani, she's done, especially if you're reaching Indians, she's done so much service of the world, you know. So when I go to meet people, oh yeah, I've seen Sister Shivani. So they have a very good impression already, mostly. So that's the website, futureofpower.org, basically, just futureofpower.org. So you can see pretty much, I think, all these materials. Not the process, because this is public, but you can see the last 10 cities and what we've done and read the quotes and see the materials. And I've got a set here and also an album. Lalita, there's an album, there's a DVD and a set of the materials. So you can see the quality. It's very good quality, very nice. The quality makes a lot of difference, even for the evening program. I think most people come because the quality of the card, because we do laminated print and then silver. We've got a silver logo embossed. And on the back now of the evening program, we put 5 people. You know, the chief guest who's always really big, like Narendra Modi. Then we put Nizar, Muslim, interesting, the host. And then we put two double foreigners, six people, two double foreigners and two Indian leaders. So it looks very interesting and attractive, the invitation. So they go to, you know, some of the sisters said, we went to the university, we gave it to all the heads of departments. They won't come, but we just want them to see it and see what kind of quality programs we do. So many came. So many of the heads of departments actually came, which they didn't expect at all. In fact, in the centers, they're quite surprised how many VIPs come to the second day program. So it's been successful, I must say. And we're also looking for another double foreigner to be like me, to live in India, to go around to all the centers. I live 5 or 6 weeks in each center and live with the Indian sisters, eat Indian food, yummy, yummy. And I don't like chilies, so that's a problem everywhere I go. But the love and the care and the sweetness and the learning is really worth it. Really worth it. It's been a tremendous learning. But, you know, talking about comfort zones, I haven't completely gotten over mine yet. So I'm going back to Australia for a nice 3 months break before I come back for the next season. So, Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. Name of this body is Archana. I'm from Pune, India. First, I would like to say thanks to Baba and Morni Didi to give me chance to share my personal experience. I'm working in Pune in a one defense institute where my particular job is to teach the M.Tech student for practical purpose. But one day my HOD called me and he said, Archana, you have to teach army officer for basic electronics. Then I said, okay, fine, I will try. But later on I come down and my colleagues and my friend, they are just telling me, ki, Archana, don't go for that. That is too difficult job because you are just of 25 and they will be of 45 up to 50. They will just make you fun. You are just looking somewhat younger, say, younger one. And they will just make you fun and they will tease you like anything. They will ask you much more unnecessary question, miscellaneous question. And if you're not able to answer them, then they will just tease you like anything. And if you cry, then that gonna too bad picture in front of them. So don't go for that. Then I say, ki, it's okay, fine. I'm trying. And I went to my home and I just said, Baba, please come down and help me. What is this thing? I too don't know. But please help me for it. And I made a very fantastic presentation for them. And later on, next day, I went to my college. And when I went to their classroom, before entering a classroom, outside I just wait for 1 minute. And I said, lovely Baba, I'm your lovely child. You love me a lot, I know. And I too love you a lot. So you have to come down and help me. I know you don't like if they make my fun. So please come down, Baba. I want your help. And then I enter in the class. First, when I went on stage, then these people just asked me who you want, whom you have to meet. Then just silently I say, ki, it's Archana. I am here to teach you basic electronics. Then they just say, oh, you are our teacher. And God knows what they are thinking, they were thinking and all that. At that time also I prayed, Baba, please come down and help me. Because now I am no one over here. But you are everything for me. And you just come and take this lecture. Now I am just out of my power. You just take care of me. And when I started explaining my presentation, I'm just starting explaining one by one. I'm starting explaining my slides, explaining my circuit diagram and all that thing. They were listening very silently, very patiently. They appreciate each and every slide, each and every presentation. As like that, my first lecture, second lecture, third lecture, I completed my 12 lectures. And it was wonderful, amazing experience. When my last lecture was started, I tell them, yeah, this is my last lecture. And they say, oh, is it? It was a really nice experience.
you explained very nicely and all that thing. But I just say, thank you, Baba. You just help me, and due to you, I can do this thing. So moral of the story is just like that, ki whenever we surrender ourselves to Baba, ki Baba, you are there for me, then He will definitely help us. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, wonderful stories of Baba's power. So if you have any questions, I mean, I'm available, but maybe you have to go to lunch. Do you have any questions, or we can end and then anyone wants to talk, you can ask me. Food is a big one. And, you know, accommodation, because I never know where I'm going to be sleeping. Sometimes cleanliness is not at my particular level. Mostly it is. The centers are mostly good. But I do carry my cleaning equipment with me. And, you know, like I do understand the Hindi muli. But, you know, every day to listen to the muli in Hindi, not to have kind of people to speak to in English. So all of those things. But I think food is one of the biggest ones. And not having, like living out of a suitcase. I just go from city to city. I usually move every 2-3 weeks. So I'm just living out of a suitcase. And I got to one point where I was so tired of not having drawers, because there's usually nothing in the room, so I just have my suitcase. And I thought, I'm going to be here 5 or 6 weeks. I'm going to buy a set of drawers. Somebody gave me money, and I thought, and they need it anyway. They got nothing in this room. So I bought a set of drawers. Next day, I fell down, because this room, you had to go down the stairs. I fell down, sprained my ankle, and couldn't stay in that room anymore. So I lost my drawers. I lost my drawers. Then I went to a hotel in the next city, because sometimes when daddy's coming, we can't stay in the centers. It's, well, unless you can stay with 10 people, we go to a hotel. So I went to the hotel and I thought, oh, wonderful. I got there at 10 o'clock at night, all these cupboards and drawers. I put everything away. 11 o'clock, I went and laid down. 11:30, I got a call from the management. Your visa's expired. You have to get out.
I lost in my drawers again, and I just thought, okay, Baba, no more drawers. Forget it.
No more drawers.
So little things like that, you know, because I like to have a place for everything, you know.
But now somebody gave me 3 little pouches. I've got 4 pouches, actually. So they're my drawers in my suitcase. So I've got my drawers, actually, but different type.
But, you know, to live like this, it's a new experience. And also the culture's so different, you know.
Our time management's different. You know, when, you know, like Baba says, when in the foreign you say you'll do something, people do it, you know? Like we have that thing, when we say we'll do it, we do it. It's not the same in every culture.
So, you know, you have to kind of always be
nagging, I guess. I'm a big nag in my job, because I'm always saying, did you do this? Are you going to do this? Can you do this? Come on,
you know, like this. So, yeah, it's a... But it's, I mean, I'm coming back, so it can't be bad, right? I'm coming back, so it must be worthwhile. Om Shanti.